Welcome to Cutthroat Queens Podcast, where I don't have to do a witty intro this time because this is a special. We're here to talk about one thing, indie horror. My name is Brett Mitchell Kent, and I'm joined with the elusive cryptid, Chelsea Pumpkins.
Chelsea Pumpkins. Did you know that the other day was, I think it was yesterday, was International Pumpkin Day or something?
Really? I thought yesterday was International Women's Day and International Peanut Cluster Day.
Today is Women's Day.
Women's Day. Oh, today's International Peanut Cluster Day.
And Women's Day.
Okay. Wow.
Which is actually fitting because we are airing on our podcast a little snippet from an upcoming anthology. And the story is by one of our favorite women, Michelle Tang.
She is lovely and talented and amazing and one of my favorite humans on the entire planet, even though she will never, ever, ever come onto our show.
I think we found like the best loophole to get her on, though, which is this.
Well, but she's not reading the story.
That's a good point.
One of these days, we just need to like, oh, nope, that's because I was going to be like, we should like record her doing something like in a conversation and just put it on the show. So we're like, oh, see, icebreaker. You're already on, might as well.
Michelle, could you just say really slowly, welcome to Cutthroat Queens for no reason, at all.
She would do it.
So anyway, today we're talking about a new anthology called Howls from the Scene of the Crime. Howl Society has put out, I think this is their fourth anthology, one a year. They've all been really phenomenal. And this one is about crime horror. And it's edited by Timaeus Bloom and Jessica Peter. And it's coming out in May, but there's a Kickstarter that's open right now to support with all kinds of like reward tiers. There's like paperbacks, hardbacks. You can get digital packages. So you can get like the audiobook, the ebook. You can even buy a pack of like all of the anthologies at once. There's stickers, bookmarks. There's really cool prints. The artist that they have for the interior illustrations is like phenomenal. I don't know if you've seen that yet, Brett.
I haven't seen them.
It's fantastic. I'm excited about this book. I've read a few of the stories, including the one that we're going to share with you today. So far, and they're all really cool. They like span like kind of true crimey stuff to like culty stuff. There's monsters, there's revenge. It's cool. I think that our readers will really enjoy it. I mean, our listeners.
Don't read a podcast. Well, and our listeners that read will really enjoy it. I love this story. I'm a fan of Michelle's writing. Not just because I love her, but because she has a very, very, I don't know the word, realized, specific, developed voice to her writing.
Oh, she so does. It's gorgeous.
And it's like lyrical and poetic, but also kind of brutal. Just.
Yeah, it's so good. Wonderful. She knows how to break your heart for sure.
Yeah.
So let me read a little bit of a blurb. The Howl Society is thrilled to announce the beginning of the crowdfunding for their fourth anthology, Howls from the Scene of the Crime, an anthology of crime horror. This fully illustrated anthology features 22 new short stories of transgressions and lawlessness laced in blood, secrets, and occult compulsions. I already mentioned the editors, Timaeus Bloom and Jessica Peter, but it also features authors such as World Fantasy and Shirley Jackson Award nominee, Christopher Buhlman, Bram Stoker Award and Lambda Literary Award winner Gwendolyn Keist, and a foreword by Bram Stoker Award-winning crime horror author Cynthia Pelayo.
Love her.
And there's tons of other authors in here that both are new and that have been around a bit. Let me go down the list. We have Joseph Andre Thomas, R.H. Newfield, C.B. Jones, one of our faves.
Joseph Andre Thomas is also one of my faves.
Opener for this anthology is like the perfect opener for an anthology.
I cannot read it. All right,
you're gonna like
can't
it.
Wait to read it.
I cannot read it.
Sorry, who was the second name?
The second name was R.H. Newfield.
Okay. And then CB Jones.
CB Jones, Ash Olivier Dong, Michelle Tang, Nathan Schutz, Christopher O'Halloran, another one of our friends, Steve Neal, his story's fantastic, LT Williams, TJ Price, Carson Winter, Christopher Buhlman, Mary Sanch. I believe she's also the illustrator. Danye Coles, J.W. Donnelly, Peter Ong Cook, Gwendolyn Keist, Jennifer L. Collins, RSL, Dustin Mendel, Lindsay Ragsdale, and M. Halstead. So all
exciting.
Kinds of authors.
Yeah, I it's exciting. Steve Neal, we've had him on before. I really like Danye Coles' writing. And we actually, I believe we've had both Jessica and Timaeus on, correct? Am I right on that?
We have, yeah, and TJ as well.
Yeah, oh, awesome.
I know, and Chris.
Yeah.
And CB. Anyway, so we're really excited to support this book. Again, the Kickstarter is open right now, and it closes on March 28th. So go check it out. We'll drop the link on Twitter. And the book will officially be out May 14th. And I know they plan to have a pretty solid StokerCon presence. So if you're going to be there, definitely swing by the table and meet the editors and probably some of the authors. And with that, we are going to share one of these stories in its audiobook form. And that title is A Fate Finer Than Death by Michelle Tang. And it's narrated by LJ Long.
A Fate Finer Than Death by Michelle Tang. Read by L.J. Long. In Madala, we do not speak of the dead. They are as saints to us, siphoned into the heavens from a crematorium's spires, above us fleshly things in all ways. The living, dirt-bound beasts that we are must never call the names of those lost to us, never seek some sign of their continued existence, lest our efforts halt their ascents and doom them to an eternity of suffering. Like many things our leaders have taught us, this is a lie. He shrieks himself awake in sweat-sodden sheets for the third time. When he catches his breath, he utters a rasping curse and punches his pillow. From the corner of his darkened chamber, you cover your mouth with your hand and bury your face into my shoulder. You are cool and solid against me, shaking with mirth, and I fling my gratitude to whatever apathetic gods might be listening that we have found each other once more. The night of my death, surely I can speak of my own, and if not, what will the constables do about it? I was not so grateful. I was afraid. One can err in life, and eventually the consequences will end. When one errs in death, however, I shivered in the shadowed alcove of his front door, while the pre-dawn chill crept into my weary muscles and aching bones. My doubt grew as the hours passed and night waned. Perhaps he won't come home tonight. Perhaps the ointment stinging my eyes has lost its potency. Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. I checked for the knife hidden in my skirts for the thousandth time, the edge honed like an obsessive purpose, and soothed my mind with my hopes of what was to come. Slow footsteps approached from down the road. My heart leapt to my throat, nimbler than my numb feet, and I stumbled as I tried to stand. Luck was on my side, for it wasn't him. The street lamp illuminated a woman's face, bitter with a cruel twist to her mouth, and I exhaled deeply, one worry assuaged. The ointment on my eyes was powerful still. Three small shades followed the strange woman like deflated balloons. More proof that all our rituals concerning the dead are meaningless. Despite the laws, punishable by public shaming or worse, the dead do not all pass on. A simple, though hard-learned, recipe of burdock root, dead man's fingers, and turmeric crushed into a paste, and applied directly to the whites of the eyes, stings like coarse salt and fiery peppers, but will reveal the spirits that remain, bound to the ones who have stripped them of life. In the months after my discovery, I approached many priests, noblemen, the magistrates themselves, anyone who might hold a modicum of power or influence. None of them listened. Not one of them wanted to know. Horseshoes clattered against stone. Wood creaked. A carriage drew near. I pressed against his front door, shaking like the delicate leaves providing me cover. He had arrived, later than I imagined, but he was here. I fixed your face clearly in my mind, my love for you stealing my nerves, lending metal to my spine. The man I'd been seeking for 2 years descended from the carriage steps. After months of handing out bribes and chasing down unfounded rumors, trading information for ointment and other small crafts, he was finally before me. A wide-shouldered, handsome thing, wearing a tailored suit and carrying a gentleman's cane. Could my sources have been mistaken? Doubt vanished a moment afterwards. My fading memory of your face was no longer necessary to grant me courage. I just had to use my burning eyes. As the tall man stumbled up the cobblestone path to his door, you appeared behind him. And not just you. A chain of silent, diaphanous women trailed in the nobleman's wake like nervous brides. The vision of you wavered as I fought back tears, swallowed sobs. But this was no time for emotion. The carriage driver pulled away. The streets were dark, and your killer was drunk. I stepped from the shadows to stop him from reaching the door, knife loose in my hand. He startled at the sight of me, swaying, eyes crossing to focus on my dark form.
"What do you want, then?"
he slurred. "Nothing from you," I said. "I'm here for Ren." Despite Madala's laws, I called your name. You did not look up at the sound of my voice. Only your killer's lurch backward earned your attention, tethered to him as you were. Drunk and surprised as he was, he avoided my pathetic attack with ease. It took mere seconds for him to disarm me. Before the night's chill could separate us, I threw all my strength, my fury, my grief, into grabbing a hold of his wide fist. His fist, which still gripped my sharp knife, I pulled towards me, into my own throat. The blade was a red-hot poker singeing my skin. My blood, my air, escaped from the hole in my throat like steam from doused steel. I called your name with numbing lips as I fell. This time, you heard me. "Beth!" You crouched at my side, eyes wide, the touch of your hands cool. "What have you done?" "Don't leave me," I said, an echo of a more painful time. "Never," you promised, gripping my limp hand within both of yours. Your killer, now mine, stood above my dying body with furious eyes. He launched a kick into my sternum that broke ribs, cursed his poor luck, and raised his voice to call for his servants. I stared into your eyes as my life passed before mine. Life is measured by events, by memories that make and break us. A summer night of our childhoods, warm and sticky, when you soothed me while I cried at the pain of my father's anger upon me, holding me as fireflies flared like dying stars around us. The autumn day you were to marry Tomas, and we pledged our eternal friendship, witnessed by falling leaves that shushed us to silence. The cold December day I found you lying on the wooded path to my house, I thought you were making snow angels in the gentle powder of the year's first snowfall, until I saw the scarlet wings spreading from your yawning throat. I held your hand while your blue eyes searched the sky before focusing on mine.
"Don't leave me,"
you whispered, the second mouth in your throat bubbling with blood. "I won't," I'd vowed. "Who did this to you?" You left me then. Left me grieving and lost and enraged. The constable that eventually came declared you ascended and deemed your name unutterable. He looked down at me as he said this, benevolently, as if expecting my gratitude. As if death was a mercy to people such as us, those who survived on the edges of civilized society working for crumbs. Once news spread, other friends celebrated on your behalf, raised cheap glasses of wine skyward and sighing with envy. Even Tomas forced a smile through his tears and threw his wedding band into the tavern fire. May we find another again, he said, but even that drew disapproving glares from eavesdroppers. He slipped away as the wooden ring burned, smoke drifting up the ash-stained flue like ghosts. As long as the nobleman lives, doors will always creak open, his nightmares will be full of blood, and sourceless voices will whisper taunts into his ears. He has grown gaunt and gray with our mischiefs, a fate his hands have denied us. I pray he has a long life. Decades Ren and I have to spend together, decades he'd robbed from us. The murderer can afford physicians and herbalists that will sustain him into old age, even as he cannot tell them what truly haunts him. In Madala, the living do not speak of the dead. But the dead, we speak to each other.